there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 345. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com, stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is This Show Is So Gay. And of course, go on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a fun show for you guys this week. Let's get started with our guest. Nathan Lee Graham is an actor, a singer, a writer, a director, a cabaret artist, and so much more. He's been in such films as Hitch, Sweet Home Alabama, the modern-day classic Zoolander, and the follow-up Zoolander 2, which is in theaters right this very second. On the television screen, he originated the role of Peter in HBO's The Comeback with Lisa Kudrow, and he's had guest starring roles on Scrubs, Absolutely Fabulous, Law & Order SVU, so many more. His Broadway credits include the Tony Award-nominated Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and one of my favorites of all time, The Wild Party, which was nominated for both the Tony and Grammy Awards. Nathan received a Drama League Award nomination for Off-Broadway's Wig Out and won a Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle Award for the West Coast premiere of The Wild Party. Also, you know, there's the part where Nathan won the Best Classical Album Grammy Award for his solo on the album Songs of Innocence, End of Experience. And right now he's here with us, Nathan Lee Graham. Welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much. This is the 345th show, you say?
There's no one else we would rather have on our 345th show.
I feel like I'm 345 years old. My God.
Well, let's talk. Is it possible? Is it fair to say that perhaps you were at some Oscar parties last night?
Yes. Kevin Hart hosted a lovely Oscar party at the W in Hollywood. And it was, I was a part of the maddening crowd. It was lovely. Naomi Campbell was there, and I had just seen her because she is also in Zoolander 2, and we've met several times before, so it was lovely to be in that company. But it is truly a job, you know? It's a job. It's just hard being glamorous and pulled up and, you know, and to maintain that for several hours. So, you know, it's a hard knock life. What can I tell you?
What went into choosing your outfit, which I encourage everyone to check out because I enjoyed what you wore very much?
Oh, thank you very much. Well, let's see. You know, you always want to pick something that's going to photograph well.
Yeah.
So this particular time I thought, you know, I hate duck. I was going to say duck suits, penguin suits, you know, the standard sort of tuxedo. So
yeah.
I always want to do something a little bit, you know, to push the envelope a little bit more fashion forward. So I thought, let me be traditional and give you, you know, the standard tuxedo cut and style, you know, with the satin lapels. But then I'll do something else with it. So I had a sort of a silver lamé houndstooth thing going on, and then a lovely silver circled bow tie with matching scarf. And then I had a lovely, lovely fleur de pin. It's the name of this. It's a python,
yeah.
Python flower that was made for me by my dear, dear friend, Andrew Werner. And he calls these flowers fleurs with an apostrophe, D. And Ben Stiller's worn these and several other people, and they're just lovely little pendants. You know, I always love a brooch or a pin. They can just jazz up a whole outfit.
Look how we're getting fashion advice, too. By the way, in 345 episodes, this is the first time silver and houndstooth have ever been in the same sentence on our show.
I love it.
It's great. It's great.
You know, you should be in a sentence like that all the time.
Oh, yeah. This is my new... it's aspirational for me. I'm going to do it all the time now. So I'm excited. Now, Nathan Lee Graham, do you get starstruck? Were there people that you saw that you're like, oh, I'm actually starstruck right now?
Not really. I mean...
Yeah.
What I get sort of starstruck by are old-school Hollywood people because, you know, I've worked with a lot of people, definitely,
yeah.
Knock on wood, and everyone is super kind. But if they're my contemporaries or, you know, I get more sort of geeky about work as opposed to the person because if they've turned in a wonderful performance, I just sort of gush over that. But there are very few people that I sort of get starstruck about. I remember meeting Sophia Loren once. And she, I could not speak to. So, she hugged me. She, you know, she embraced me, and then I found my face in her bosom. She was wearing a wonderful Diane Furstenberg, a black wrap dress, and she is a superstar. You know, this is a real movie star. So those kinds of people, I get sort of starstruck about. But, you know, you're Ryan Reynolds, you're this, you're that. They're wonderful, but I love their work, and but no, it's sort of par for the course, you know.
For most people, Nathan, using the phrase, the time that I was in Sophia Loren's bosom, that's a euphemism. For you, that seems to be an actual thing that happened.
Yes.
Okay.
It is. It is, and it's just so funny because, you know, I always tell people I don't have to exaggerate because all you have to do is look at something I've been in or look at me. This is a life that needs no exaggeration.
Nice.
So, you know, when I tell people that Eartha Kitt was my dear, dear friend and that I worshipped her as a kid, as a teenager, and then got to meet her subsequently and then got a chance to work with her. So she was, you know, I had this sort of idol worship of her, and then I worked with her, so she became a mentor, and then she became a colleague, and then a friend until her dying day. And you just, you know, you can't make this stuff up, right? So it's just amazing. So there you have it, Sophia Loren's bosom.
I use that as a metaphor every other Tuesday, but for you it was real. That's amazing. Well, let's talk about that life that needs no exaggeration. Let's go back a few years to Nathan Lee Graham growing up in the St. Louis area. Is that correct?
That's correct. I would say St. Louis and Los Angeles because my parents were getting divorced and remarried, so we were back and forth between the two states, or the two cities, I should say, Los Angeles and St. Louis, sort of equally. And they were wonderful because they're both sort of hubs for great entertainment. Believe it or not, St. Louis has produced so many wonderful actors and musicians. And, of course, Los Angeles is Los Angeles, you
right.
know, it's Hollywood. So just wonderful to go back and forth and to sort of have this sort of Midwestern, sort of roots, which made me not completely nuts when I was out here in California. And of course, now I live in New York. So I would say that having those two elements in my life growing up really sort of helped me have a foundation where I'm not sort of all over the place and I didn't get sort of strung out and I sort of have my feet firmly on the ground, even though I flit about from here, from each, you know, from flower to flower. But I would say that growing up has been pretty extraordinary because I got a chance to work with such wonderful people from the start. You know, my first project was I was involved with the Bad News Bears Go to Japan, and that was with Tony Curtis and Walter Matthau and Jack Gordon.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is back in the, you know, Middle Ages, because, you know, I'm no spring chicken, although I look terrific.
You got the silver and the houndstooth. You look amazing. Was this always the dream? Was this the direction you wanted to go, just running around between those two cities? You said, look, I want to make a go of being an actor. This is the direction I want to go?
You know, it's funny. I don't have a point in my life where I sort of have this epiphany. I suppose, you know, when I was in school and at church, you do a speech here, you sing a song there, and then someone pulls you out and your parents go, hey, he's really good at this sort of thing and it's a positive thing, so let's encourage it. And it just sort of went on from there, to be honest. It's something I've always loved doing. I come from a family of educators and preachers, so everyone's sort of, you know, orators and speech makers, and, you know, we always are sort of performative in that kind of way. And it just sort of came as second nature, and then I had this modicum of talent that, you know, my parents sort of really encouraged and supported. And that's how it started, really, and I've never actually done anything else. You know, I've never actually had any other jobs other than, you know, I like to say when I first moved to New York, I did these things called sample sales. But basically, that was just to buy couture for myself and Christmas gifts for my family. I never actually used that to pay anyone's rent. So, and I never actually filled out any sort of application. So I've been very fortunate to, you know, always be in this business and have never done anything else, really.
I love it. Would you say there's any type of narrative thread that connects the work that you do? Is there a certain part to which you gravitate?
I would say now, you know, well, let me backtrack. I used to be very frustrated because I thought I was a jack of all trades and a master of nothing. Because I would go from one medium to the next. So I'd be doing something classical, then I'd go do something Broadway, and then I'd do a TV thing, and then I'd do a film thing. And each time I did those things, I was always the new guy because I would never sort of stick with one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've come to find out now is that this has been a blessing, because when something is waning and something is not sort of picking up, when the work gets sort of thin, I can always have something else that picks it up. And now I feel like I'm a master of all of these things, you know, having done all of these things, you know, quite a bit, and at the top of my game with the top people. And it's just been very encouraging to be a part of all of that. So speed up to now, cut to now, I find that when I started out, I wanted to do more gay roles. Mm-hmm. I wanted to represent the gay community. And it just wasn't happening. And if it was happening, it was like, hello, with a big, you know, pink boa,
right?
You know, coming out of a cake. And it's just like, I don't know anyone like that who isn't kidding or, you know, on stage playing a role, a character role. And I really wanted to just be, you know, a normal, fabulous gay person, like all the fabulous gay people that I knew in every walk of life. And when I started out, I could not get a gay role to save my life. The Wild Party actually was the first gay role I've ever had. If you believe that or not. And that was in the year 2000.
Wow.
You know, 99, 2000. And it's because they say, well, you're not gay enough. I'm like, well, your vision, your prejudices, your bias, your what you think is a gay person is just not true. We are so dimensional, and we're just like everyone else. So, you know, not to the point of being boring, but, you know, we don't want that.
Right.
But you do want somebody to represent you in a cognitive, thoughtful, smart, and multi-layered way. And so it's been my absolute goal to have a gay character or a gay role in every single thing that's ever written, because that's what's happening in life. It's like, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, I ride the A train home every day in New York on the subway. And I'm like, well, I'm gay the entire trip. I don't stop being gay between 86th Street and 96th Street.
Right.
You know, it's like we're always here, we're always around, and we need to be represented. So now I actually enjoy and I look forward to portraying the characters that I do, because it's just like, you know, I gotta represent. And to tell you the truth, I got a lot of flack, even from my gay brothers and sisters when I started out, because they're like, Nathan, you're going to be pigeonholed, and you don't want to do that, and you haven't really proven yourself unless you've played straight roles. I'm like, well, I couldn't get a gay role. You know, I've only played straight roles. And my thing is, that's ridiculous, and it's so self-loathing, and so there's so many negative connotations behind that I can't, you know, mention. And so but I was really surprised to get that kind of reaction from, you know, my gay brothers and sisters who were, you know, honestly and justifiably so afraid of, you know, being out and not working.
Right.
So I just said, listen, I can't double act. I can't go into a role and say, how would a straight person play this role? You know, and then it's like, listen, if the role is good, if it's written well, sign me up. And that's my only prerequisite for any work. Is the score good? Is the script good? Is the libretto good? Is the screenplay good? Okay, great. Can I offer something to this? Great. Is it going to move someone in some kind of way? Is it going to make them laugh? Going to make them cry? Going to make them think? Going to make them forget? These are my prerequisites for any work I do. And if it happens to be a person who happens to be gay, so be it, you know, all the better. And I would prefer to do it so that I know that it's done properly.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel.
Again, listeners, we are here with actor, singer, writer, director, cabaret artist Nathan Lee Graham. In talking about that fear that some of your colleagues have expressed, how would you characterize 2016? Is that a fear that is much diminished? Is it non-existent? Is it still very present of taking on gay actors, taking on gay roles, and whether or not that will pigeonhole them?
I suppose now it's become very individualistic. And what I mean by that, it's actor upon actor. It's where you are in your career, what you want from your career, and how you want to live your life, honestly. The lines between the actor and the celebrity and the human being have all been blurred. I happen to have liked a little anonymity in as much as that the magic of being an artist, what you see on the screen or what you see on the stage, that's really what the public should have.
Right.
But we live in a different time now, and so people want to know a little bit more. So with that, you have to be cognizant of what your image is and what you're putting out there and what you want back from it and stand behind that. So I say to people, listen, if your work is solid, then go out there and do it, and then have your private life be your private life. The sort of bigger you come, the more exposed you are. Of course, that private life is going to, you know, be diminished in as much as that it's not going to be as private as you want. That's the price of working hard and becoming successful.
Yeah.
At the same time, you, to thy own self be true. So it's like, it's really a case-by-case basis, I guess, and what you want out of your career. I know for me, I'd like to lay my head down at night and not have to answer to anyone and to be proud of who I am and the work that I do. And so in order for me to do that, and because acting is being and is, you know, as much truth telling as you can, I have to tell the truth in my own personal life as well. And, you know, keep some secrets for myself that are personal. But I cannot be afraid of what someone's going to say about me based upon a role that I did. You know,
yeah.
I can't.
One of the things I love about you is that you, in every interview, in any media I've seen about you, you actually seem genuinely proud of your work. And that's something that I love when people stand by their work. It's so inspiring to the rest of us. Is that something that you very much feel, that you are proud of your work? Because it really does come across.
I absolutely am. I'm, first of all, very privileged and very honored to do it. And it's a big deal to me that I'm part of the working actor community. So that's already like a huge thing that I even work at all. And when I get a chance to do my job, I take it very seriously. And once it's done, if all the powers that be are pleased, you know, i.e. director, producer, composer, what have you, and the final analysis myself, I'm hoping that the public receives it in the spirit in which it was worked upon. And I can be nothing but proud of that. Yes, it's a subjective business, and people will have their opinions, but the product that I put out, I work very hard at what I do, and nothing is arbitrary or phoned in. So I can honestly say I'm very proud of the work that I have out there.
My hope is that you know how inspiring that is to the rest of us.
I hope so. I really do. Because I certainly put a lot of effort into it. And I hope that someone who is like me, and what I mean by that, the essence, the entity, can be inspired in some kind of way to do whatever it is they want to do. So
amazing.
Whether that's carpentry or on the stage or some sort of scientist, you know, knock it out of the park and be your best.
Love it. I love it. Let's hit some random points of your life. In my head, you have gotten into arguments with people and you have ended the argument by saying, "That's great, but I have a Grammy." Has that actually happened?
Sort of.
Yeah. I feel it. I feel it. I feel like it's happened. You have trumped people. It might have even been in a clutch that you were holding, and here's my Grammy, and that was it. Boom, conversation ended.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do have a lot of bullet point conversations where I sort of, you know, they'll start the conversation and I'll definitely end it.
Nice. I love it. That's not exactly what a radio show host wants to hear, but I'm going to keep going. Back in 2008, when I was in New York City, I saw a little show called Wig Out. And I don't know if you know this show, Nathan Lee Graham, but you were not only in the show, but you were nominated for a Drama League Award for that show. I loved that show.
Yes, it was amazing to do. It was my return to the stage, really. I had been on stage for quite some time. And I was living in Los Angeles at the time. And my agent at the time said to me, Nathan, there's a wonderful script by a wonderful new playwright named Terrell Alvin McCraney. And I think it would be something that you would really be interested in doing. And the reason this show is so special, and I hope I don't cry when I say this, is because this was the last show that Eartha came to see.
Mm.
She had died later on that year, Christmas Day, 2008. And she was under strict doctor's orders not to come and see anything. But she took a car down to come to the opening of Wig Out. And I told my castmates that I think Earth is coming tonight. And they said, oh, yeah, right, yeah. And, of course, right after the performance, she burst through the dressing room doors. Nathan! And she stayed for the opening night party. And it really was an incredibly beautiful gesture, because I knew that she wasn't well, although she looked incredible. And she had made the effort to come down from Westchester, and she sat through the entire performance, and she thoroughly enjoyed it.
Ugh.
And said so, and then stayed for the after party as well. And it was just a beautiful thing, and that show sort of changed the trajectory for me. And I moved back to New York City shortly thereafter, because I said, you know what, the theater is my bread and butter. It's the nucleus. It's the basis of all things that I love, and I have to get back on stage. And that was my beginning again. And I cannot say enough about that play. It was just beautifully written. Terrell is a wonderful, incredible phenom of a playwright, and Tina Landau, of course, is just an extraordinary director. So it was just wonderful.
I'm not sure how this video has escaped my attention for so long, but it was only recently that I saw there's a clip from the Eartha Kitt story All by Myself on YouTube, and it's Eartha Kitt on Love and Compromise. And if people have not seen this YouTube clip of Eartha Kitt talking about love and compromise, I cannot even tell you how much it has helped me in my life and the way that I look at relationships. So I can't even imagine, you know, being in that friendship that you two so clearly shared.
Well, I've seen that clip several times.
Yeah.
And all I can tell you is she meant every word.
There you go. Eartha Kitt on Love and Compromise. Everybody check that out on YouTube. Now, Nathan Lee Graham, this is not something that I've ever said on this show before, and I'm mortified to say it. I'm a little bit nervous about the backlash. We'll see what happens. But I have never in my life seen an episode of Absolutely Fabulous.
Well, listen, it's okay.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay.
You know why it's okay? It's okay because you can still see them.
Okay.
So I'm crossing you, you know, right now with my hand.
Okay.
And saying to you, and I'm throwing the holy water on your head. I'm saying to you that that it is possible for you to see this. I will not tell Jennifer Saunders and Joanna Lumley that you haven't seen it.
Thank you.
They are delightful. I cannot wait to see this latest film they have coming out. I wish I was in that film, but I was busy doing another little film called Zoolander 2.
Yes.
And they are a delight. Can I just tell you, I shot that with Whoopi Goldberg. She played my boss. She was the boss of the Gay and Lesbian Center where Jennifer Saunders goes to find her son, who is a counselor there. And we just had a magical, magical time. It was such a fabulous time because also the night before that, I had premiered Sweet Home Alabama. That's exactly the right, yes. Yeah. So when I was walking down the red carpet, and people would ask me, you know, interviewers would line up and ask me what I was doing what I was doing next. I said, well, tomorrow I'm shooting Absolutely Fabulous. It was just, I had a grin from ear to ear because of this. And I cannot tell you how fabulous that shoot was, because the girls are wonderful friends and they're amazing. And we even sort of rewrote our sketches together. Oh, they're the best.
Wow. I want to back up a step. I just want to highlight to our listeners that even though I am a gay Jew from New Jersey, somehow Nathan Lee Graham crossing me and throwing holy water on me, very effective. Very effective. Thank you, Nathan.
You are welcome. Of course, we can have Shabbos together as well, or Seder.
I cannot even begin to express to you how a life goal now is to have a Seder with you. I'm going to make it happen. We're doing
Please.
It. We're doing
and
it.
And I like my kugel crunchy. I don't like it too soft.
Okay, well, now you're just into Jewish porn. We just crossed a line. Like, you're not talking about kugel on my show when I'm trying to focus.
And I like the corner. I like the preferred corner. And I like, now this is blasphemous, but I like a little cinnamon in my applesauce.
I've used that pickup line as well, so I'm so impressed that you just used it. That was great. Tell everybody, I have to move on from the kugel, tell everybody all about Zoolander 2 currently in theaters. Why should they go see it?
Listen, everyone should go see it because it celebrates everybody. You know, it's all about being yourself, being ridiculous, being over the top, and having a good time and laughing. I suggest that you always see these kinds of films under the influence of something. I am not promoting drugs. I am simply saying you should be under the influence of something. Now, whether that's a high C or a high C. So, you know, do you. But I suggest that you will enjoy the film through that kind of lens a little bit more.
Got it.
If you have something that makes you feel good.
You could be under the influence of kugel, cinnamon in your applesauce, whatever it might be.
Absolutely, and a little manischewitz.
I'm telling you, I'm calling my parents right after this, and I'm going to tell them, because they live right outside New York City, we are having an extra guest for the Seder, so it's very exciting.
I will be there.
I'm making this happen. My mom's like, are you coming back? Well, I wasn't going to, but now Nathan Lee Graham's going to be there, so totally doing it.
I certainly will.
What is coming up for you, my friend, that you are excited about?
So there are a couple things happening. I'm doing concerts all over the place. I have a concert in L.A. It's going to be happening in April, and then I'm back at 54 Below in New York in May, and then I'm on the RSVP cruise. This summer, going down the Danube on the riverboat cruise, and then I'm up in Saratoga Springs singing at the Mansion. So all of these wonderful venues. And I'm working on three new musicals, workshops. One in particular, I'm so excited. Well, actually, I'm excited about all of them. But there's one in particular that would be apropos for our show today. It's called The View Upstairs, and it's based upon I would like to say, the first sort of major terrorist hate crime against the LGBTQ community. This happened in the mid to early 70s, I believe, in New Orleans, at a bar called The Upstairs. And the customers, mm-hmm. were burned alive in this gay club. Hmm. And people really need to look up that story and find out more about it. And we're doing a musical based on it. Max Vernon is a brilliant young new composer in New York City. And I'm very much looking forward to The View Upstairs. And then also, I'm working with a new guy by the name of Michael R. Jackson on a piece called A Strange Loop. And this is a new musical based upon a black, gay musical theater writer who happens to be a Broadway usher. And then all of the voices in his head. So you can imagine that this is going to be fabulous. We're presenting the music of Strange Loop at 54 Below. That's happening in April as well, because they do a whole new series called New Musicals at 54. So this is fabulous. And as far as some of the things I can't talk about, you can always go to NathanLeeGraham.com. And then once I've signed the contract, then I know that, you know, I am on board, people can always find out what's going on next with me.
Well, I have to tell you, the project I am most excited about is that new feature coming out called Ken's Parents Seder, which is, it's an independent film. Listen, let me tell you about you for a second. You, sir, Nathan Lee Graham, have an energy that just jumps off the screen. I have to tell you, I just watch your work, and I think that you are talent personified. It is such a joy to see you on the screen and to see the work that you've done, and certainly to have had the opportunity to see you on the stage. It really is an honor to behold your work, Nathan.
I really, really appreciate you saying that. We don't often get a chance to hear it so directly, especially if you're doing a film or television. It's, you know, it's done. Of course, people come up to me every day and are very, very kind. I cannot thank them enough. And it's always something new. You know, it's never like, I love you and this and this and this. It's just always random, and I really appreciate that. But to hear it so genuinely right now is it's a big deal. So I thank you. I thank you.
Listeners, stroll on over to NathanLeeGraham.com or go out in theaters right this very second and go see him in Zoolander 2. Nathan, so looking forward to everything you will gift to us in the future, and certainly so appreciative of everything you've gifted to us in the past.
I thank you so much. I look forward to later.
And we are back. Well, we have tons of time left on this week's episode to get to all of the latest LGBTQ news, so let's get to it. Hopefully this puts the finishing touches on this story we've been covering for weeks and weeks and weeks. South Dakota Governor Dennis DeGarde this week vetoed a bill that would have restricted transgender students' use of restrooms, locker rooms, and other gender-specific facilities in public schools. Many of you probably missed this story because it came right in the middle of all of the Super Tuesday results, but this is undoubtedly very, very good news. The bill does not address any pressing issue, said the governor in his veto message. He also insisted that such decisions were best left to local school officials and that the law posed grave risks for costly liability for schools and the states. Indeed, the American Civil Liberties Union had threatened legal action if the bill was signed. Thomas Lewis, an 18-year-old Sioux Falls transgender high school student, said this quote, "I am so happy right now, you have no idea." Thomas noted that while his school supports him, the veto shows that, quote, "the government's not going to hold me back from who I really am." The measure would have been the first law of its kind in the nation requiring trans young people to use facilities designated for the gender they were assigned at birth, not the ones matching their gender identity. LGBT groups, businesses, and child advocacy organizations had all called on the governor to veto the bill, which they deemed stigmatizing and dangerous to trans youth, in addition to being flat out unnecessary. If the bill had been signed into law, advocates say the bill may have fueled escalating legislative attacks against trans people that are unfolding in more than 36 proposed new laws across 16 states. We are going to see these bills pop up in 16 more states. But advocates hope that the veto signals a critical turn in favor of trans equality that may bode well in the push to stop similar anti-trans bills pending in other states, including one that still remains alive in South Dakota. Still right there in South Dakota, which would restrict trans students' participation not in going to the bathroom here, but in sports. In a statement issued by the Human Rights Campaign, President Chad Griffin said this, quote, "Governor DeGarde chose to do the right thing and veto this outrageous legislation attacking transgender kids. Today, the voices of fairness and equality prevailed, and these students' rights and dignity prevailed against overwhelming odds and vicious opponents in the state legislature." And Chris Hayashi, executive director of the Transgender Law Center, added this, quote, Governor DeGaud made the right call in vetoing this dangerous legislation, sparing South Dakota the risky and costly experiment of becoming the first state to mandate discrimination against trans youth in violation of federal law and student privacy and well-being. So the hope here is that this now will set the standard for other governors in other states, hopefully other lawmakers across the U.S. This is a Republican governor, indeed a moderate Republican. But yeah, the hope is here that this sets the tone. That would be great. So a huge victory there. Everybody is quite excited about this, but we have to stay on the alert because these bills are going to be popping up in at least 16 more states. At least 16 more states, this is where the attention has turned. But for now, good news out of South Dakota. In national news, the United States Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has filed its first lawsuits challenging sexual orientation discrimination as unlawful sex discrimination. The EEOC, which ruled last year, as we told you last year, that sexual orientation discrimination is, by its very nature, discrimination because of sex, and therefore prohibited under federal law, they have accused a healthcare center in Pennsylvania of discriminating against a gay man and a pallet distribution company in Maryland of discriminating against a lesbian. The EEOC charges that at Scott Medical Health Center, a pain control and weight loss clinic in Pittsburgh, a manager used anti-gay slurs to refer to a gay male telemarketer and made other highly offensive comments about his sexuality and his sex life. According to the suit, filed this week in U.S. District Court for the Western District of Pennsylvania, in 2013, telemarketing manager Robert McClendon, quote, routinely made unwelcome and offensive comments about Baxley, this is Dale Baxley, the telemarketer, including but not limited to regularly calling him fag and other names that I will not say here, and other statements that also I cannot say on the air here. The suit also states that upon learning that Baxley had a male partner, McClendon made highly offensive statements to Baxley about Baxley's relationship with the partner, and he said things that I can't say here. So it's just a lot of things that I can't say on the air, which doesn't make for very good news, but I leave it up to your imagination that they were extraordinarily offensive, and the EEOC has filed complaints about it right here in a lawsuit. In the other suit filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of Maryland, Baltimore Division, the EEOC charges that in 2014, at an IFCO systems location in Baltimore, night shift manager Charles Lowry subjected forklift operator Yolanda Boone, a lesbian, to continual harassment. His statements such as, I want to turn you back into a woman, are you a girl or a man, and you don't have any breasts, were all alleged in this suit. He also quoted biblical passages. Both suits seek punitive and compensatory damages for the employees, plus orders from the court for the companies to end harassment and discrimination and provide a work environment that is not hostile. So this is a very, very big deal. The first time the EEOC is filing complaints here. EEOC General Counsel David Lopez said in a press release, quote, with the filing of these two suits, EEOC is continuing to solidify its commitment to ensuring that individuals are not discriminated against in workplaces because of their sexual orientation. While some federal courts have begun to recognize this right under Title VII, it is critical that all courts do so. So very exciting legal. I know it sounds very technical, but this is a big deal because any number of agencies pass these policies and then they don't follow up on them. But here, the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is really backing up their words with action. And we like when people back up their words with actual action. So kudos to the EEOC. In a very bizarre story, two anti-gay Michigan lawmakers who allegedly concocted a fake sex scandal to divert attention from their own love affair could face years in prison if convicted on all charges. This is a bizarre story. Republican State Representatives Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat left the Michigan State Legislature in September after Corser's office sent a bizarre email to Republican operatives implying that he enjoyed paying men for sex outside bars in Lansing. The purpose of this email was to allegedly deflect from an extramarital affair Corser was actually having with fellow married lawmaker Gamrat. This is so nutty. Gamrat and Corsa are both Tea Party Republicans who have taken strong stances against marriage equality. Corsa was charged with 4 felonies, including lying under oath, which is a 15-year felony, according to one newspaper there in Michigan. He also faces 3 counts of misconduct in office for attempting to force staff members to send out false emails. Corsa allegedly fired one staffer who refused to send an email accusing the lawmaker of male-on-male paid-for-sex and being a bisexual porn-addicted deviant. This is really a story that has happened. This is an elected official who doesn't want people to know that he's having sex with another married official, so he was trying to force his staff members to send out little pieces of gossip saying, no, 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 he's gay, to deflect attention from his affair. The other 2 misconduct charges against him are for forgery and lying to the House Business Office and carry a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison. I think one of the things that this story highlights is that it is still sensational to put out there that a lawmaker might be gay, might be bisexual, might be lesbian, right? So if we can use that gossip to our advantage, it will certainly deflect attention away from the fact that apparently we're having extramarital affairs with other married lawmakers. So the threat of same-sex relationships, enough to divert attention for only a short amount of time in Michigan before these folks got caught. They have both resigned and they are facing charges. Unbelievable story there in Michigan. More than 2 dozen LGBT people of faith were removed from a Nashville hotel last week after disrupting Pastor Rick Warren's public worship ceremony at the National Religious Broadcasters Annual Conference. At least 25 protesters marched through the auditorium carrying signs that quoted Bible verses and read "Stop Killing Us" as Pastor Warren was speaking, and they attempted to conduct a prayer in protest of the conference, as well as the evangelical megachurch pastor's anti-LGBT stances. Sarah Green, a student at Vanderbilt University's Divinity School, said this, quote, "We as LGBT people occupy spaces in Christianity and we can praise and worship too. First and foremost, we are speaking out against the killing of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in the name of our faith." Conference attendees reportedly shouted, "Homosexuality is an abomination," and "They're not really praying," as the activists gathered to form a prayer circle in the lobby, according to one press release. Local police and hotel security then escorted the protesters off the hotel grounds. The direct action was organized by Know Your Neighbors, a collaboration between LGBT faith and social justice organizations SoulForce and Political Research Associates, with a mission of stopping the global cultural wars here at home. So there you go. Some protesters getting kicked out of a conference trying to get their voices heard. In California, a California school has asked about 12 students wearing anti-gay stickers to remove the badges, at least for now. Both anti-gay stickers and pro-gay rights symbols previously had been allowed as a matter of free speech at Shadow Hills High School in Indio, which is a city outside Palm Springs, but Superintendent Gary Rutherford wrote in a letter to Shadow Hills staff this week that new information had prompted an additional review. He did not note what that new information was. He wrote this, quote, "Recently, some information has been brought forward that requires additional investigation and follow-up to determine a proper course of action. Pending further investigation, we are going to ask students who are displaying the symbol showing a rainbow pattern with a circle and a line, at least for now, to remove symbols while here at school." Federal courts have allowed some limits on student speech, allowing schools to prohibit items like banners and t-shirts that mention drug use. At the Shadow Hills School, some students and staff object to the stickers because they felt that the gay and lesbian community has been targeted. That's according to Amy Oberman, an advanced placement U.S. history teacher. We love when teachers are stepping up and making their voices heard. This history teacher, Amy Oberman, said this, quote, "Yes, there is freedom of speech established by the Supreme Court decision, Tinker, but at least in my view, it's a hate crime because a group was targeted." District administrators said last week they thought allowing the stickers was the right course of action. Laura Fisher, Assistant Superintendent of Personnel Services, said this, quote, "Sometimes people can be uncomfortable because of an opinion, but that doesn't mean it's bullying." I want to go back to the advanced placement U.S. history teacher, Amy Oberman. This is a huge deal. When we have teachers who step up and make their voices heard and say, I am stepping up and I am making my voice heard in support of the LGBTQ student population, it really does make a huge difference. Last week, I had the opportunity to spend some time with a diversity class at Baldwin Wallace University. This is a group of K through 12 teachers to be, teachers in training, who are all required to take this semester long diversity course. And so, talk to them about LGBTQ issues in schools. And it's just another opportunity to remind our teachers to be and our current teachers, everybody in the education field, that when teachers make themselves known to LGBTQ students as supportive presences, it really does save the lives of LGBTQ students. That's not hyperbole. It's actually proven. Students experience less suicidality. They experience less depression when they are attending a school where they can identify a teacher or a staff member who is supportive. And when they can identify five or more teachers and staff members who are supportive, who are allies, it makes an exponentially higher difference to these students. It makes them feel safer. They miss school less. They experience less depression and suicidality. It actually makes a difference. These are measurable results. So kudos to advanced placement U.S. history teacher Amy Oberman for stepping up there. Let's go across the seas for a second over to the Netherlands. I don't know that we've ever talked about the Netherlands before. The Netherlands Parliament this week voted to provide a haven for gay asylum seekers who are facing abuse in refugee shelters. The motion to provide gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender asylum seekers with special shelter was passed by a majority in Parliament following reports of anti-gay assaults to refugees in many different countries across the world. So kudos to the Netherlands for stepping up to provide a haven for gay asylum seekers. We would like all of the states to do that. A very cool story, an amusing story out of Iceland. There is new competition for the gayest method of transport out there. London has a rainbow taxi, a rainbow bus, and a rainbow train. Well, Iceland's WOW airline is the latest entrant into the gay vehicular contest, and their effort gives all of these rainbow methods of transportation a run for their money. The airline, which is known for its pink and purple themed planes, announced this week that its new Airbus, the A330, will serve a route to San Francisco. It has been named in honor of the gay movement. CEO Skúli Mogensen, I'm fairly sure that I butchered that name, explained the decision to christen the plane TF Gay, G-A-Y, saying, quote, one of our pilots came to me and suggested this name, and I thought it was a cool idea, so we went ahead with it. He added the name as a nod to the history of San Francisco, and it fits with the company's naming system following TF Mom, TF Dad, TF Sis, TF Bro, TF Son, and TF Kid. He told Gay Iceland, which is a media outlet, the name fits perfectly into this concept of ours to create a modern family out of our airplanes from the names we give them. WOW is basically mom upside down, and everyone loves their mom. Since day one, we've emphasized joy and friendliness in our services because we want everyone to feel welcome in the WOW family, and we think TF Gay fits right in with our modern family concept. He added this, addressing people who might not want to travel on a big pink gay plane. He said this, quote, if I were worried or scared of what people might say about me or what I do, then WOW Air wouldn't exist. Prejudice and narrow-mindedness are usually the result of ignorance and an inferiority complex, so such views judge themselves. I really want to be on the gay plane, the big pink WOW gay plane. TF Gay. That is a bunch of selfies waiting to happen. People will be very excited about that there in San Francisco. In some very exciting LGBTQ movie news, J.J. Abrams, director J.J. Abrams, said it would be impossible not to include gay characters in upcoming films. Many fans have been wondering when an openly gay character will appear in a galaxy far, far away there in the Star Wars Enterprise, and J.J. Abrams thinks it's definitely going to happen very soon. He said, quote, of course, when I talk about inclusivity, it's not excluding gay characters, it's about inclusivity. inclusivity, so of course. The award-winning director says that it is not plausible that gay characters would not exist in the Star Wars universe. He said, quote, "To me, the fun of Star Wars is the glory of possibility, so it seems insanely narrow-minded and counterintuitive to say that there wouldn't be a homosexual character in that world." Although Abrams gave no specific details regarding which characters may or may not be LGBT, many fans already have their suspicions. Last year, Star Wars The Force Awakens featured a close bond between Resistance pilot Poe Dameron and Stormtrooper Finn, with rumors spreading that Disney is setting up a gay romance between two of the film's main characters. Oscar Isaac, who played Poe Dameron, added fuel to the fire by hinting at an undisclosed romance of some kind, adding, quote, "I think it's very subtle romance that's happening. You know, you have to just look very close. You have to watch it a few times to see the little hints, but there was." That's what he was quoted as saying. Rian Johnson, who is directing the next Star Wars film, appears to be a supporter of the rumor, even tweeting fan art of the pairing. This would be astronomically huge news there in the Star Wars universe. It will make such a difference for any number of folks out there who are huge fans of the Star Wars Enterprise, of which I am. Oh, I guess I shouldn't say Star Wars Enterprise because I'm mixing some language from Star Wars and Star Trek. I just mean the Star Wars universe, not the ship that's in Star Trek. Lest there are any geeks or nerds out there listening to the show who will take me to task, because that has certainly happened here before. So yes, I'm talking solely about Star Wars. I don't know much about Star Trek. Write in to me, ken@thisshowisogay.com, if you know more about LGBT themes in Star Trek. I know nothing there. And I've put this off as long as possible. Certainly, there are some connections between LGBTQ issues and Super Tuesday and the National Presidential Front. None of them are really that positive. All of them make me cringe. Two prominent Donald Trump supporters who are finding fame online have claimed that Republican Marco Rubio is hiding a secret gay past. Rubio is currently trailing Trump in all Republican polls everywhere. During the final debate ahead of Super Tuesday, CNN decided to get analysis from the Stump for Trump girls, two sisters who have found fame online due to their strong support of Mr. Trump. However, the pair Lynette Diamond Hardaway and Rochelle Silk Richardson made a surprising claim during the live TV interview. Diamond said, quote, "Marco Rubio told us to Google Donald Trump, but I did one better. I Googled him. And when I Googled him, you know, he owes America and the gay community an apology because it sounds like he may have had a gay lifestyle in the past." That was on live TV. CNN anchor Carol Castell interjected, "What? No, Lynette," but Diamond continued to make the allegations. She continued, quote, "That's what's on Google. You have to be cautious when you tell people to Google people. Stuff will come up. We don't know it's true, so we say allegedly, but he shouldn't have told people to Google Donald because I Googled him and that's what came up." Ms. Hardaway is presumably referring to claims made by a notorious conspiracy theorist who said he has proof that anti-LGBT Republican Marco Rubio attended a foam party in a gay club. Again, we are using rumors about someone being gay to completely discredit them. Am I a supporter of Marco Rubio? No, I am not a supporter of Marco Rubio, but I do not support the idea of, to discredit him, we're going to put out there rumors that he might be gay. That doesn't work for anyone in the gay community, no matter if we support Marco Rubio or not. We do not use rumors like that. That does not help anyone. Also regarding this national presidential front, there's a great article over at Pink News, and you should always check out Pink News. They have a lot of cool stories, a lot of cool opinions. It's pinknews.co.uk. And this article is entitled, "LGBT Equality Will Be at Stake in Clinton-Trump Presidential Race." I'll read you a little bit of this. As the results come in from the largest day of voting in the U.S. presidential primaries, pro-LGBT Democrat Hillary Clinton is currently well ahead of Bernie Sanders, while Donald Trump has blasted away most of the Republican field. Mr. Trump has rallied against equality in recent weeks, telling Fox News that he would likely back a plot to overturn same-sex marriage and telling evangelical leaders that they can trust him to protect traditional marriage. In a bid to court right-wingers, he has also assured lobbyists that he would not block a Kim Davis-style religious freedom law to permit discrimination against gay couples. Following these results, the Human Rights Campaign has warned that LGBT rights will be at play in an eventual showdown between the two. HRC President Chad Griffin said this, quote, "In the biggest showdown of the campaign so far, the strong showing from both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump foreshadows the stakes for millions of LGBT Americans in November. As pro-equality voters look towards Election Day, the difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump on LGBT equality are enormous. Hillary Clinton has presented a clear vision for creating a better future for LGBT people across the nation. Donald Trump has demonstrated that he would block full LGBT equality as president, whether it's by appointing Supreme Court justices to overturn nationwide marriage equality, or by supporting legislation that would lead to more Kim Davis-like discrimination. And the article goes on, but suffice to say, there are many pundits out there saying that a contest between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, one of the issues at stake is LGBTQ equality. So this is where we urge everyone at this point to please get involved. Your vote is your voice. Your voice is your vote. You have to get out there and vote and use your voice in that way to make a difference. So critically important. One vote really does make a difference. I just heard about its election in my former stomping grounds of Brattleboro, Vermont, where the election for select board was decided by one vote. One vote for a major town office. So please know that your vote really does make a difference. And there are more races out there than just the president of the United States. So you want to get out there and learn about your local elections, because a lot of difference can be made on that local front. And I know the vast majority of you are living in municipalities that don't have protections for LGBTQ individuals. And that really does start in many places on a local level. So go do some research and hold your candidates to the fire and ask them, hey, what are you going to do to support me? Please, please get involved. Please, please vote. Our huge, huge thanks to Nathan Lee Graham. What an absolute treat to have him on the show. He is just talent incarnate, and he's going to do even more great things on all sorts of screens and stages all across this great world. So go check him out, NathanLeeGraham.com. And that's it for me, folks. Get out there. Go use your voice to make a difference for your LGBTQ brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, while you're out there using your voice, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
There comes a time, eventually, when the cold black water goes under the bridge. So I say yes, we can meet up. It's been too long and life goes on and I can do this. You wanna thank me for everything you've learned, from what went wrong and how I paved the path for the corner that you've turned. And this is what you've learned, but what you just wish you hadn't learned it on me. I'm glad that I've seen you face to face. It's just slightly more cathartic than a letter, but the line is pretty fine. In fact, it's pretty much erased.